Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Welcome to the program, my friends, Earth Explorers all over planet Earth. Welcome to X Squared Radio. We're coming to you live from east of the Appalachian Mountains. Our AccuWindow forecast, 50 degrees, cool, and a chance of storms tonight, thunderstorms. Hopefully we don't get hit by lightning. We have been hit before on this program. Very auspicious evening, to be sure. A solar wind stream of about 431 kilometers per second is buffeting Earth's magnetic field and causing some geomagnetic activity around the Arctic Circle. High-latitude sky watchers should be alert for auroras. Sunspot 1057 is crackling with C-class solar flares. Sea flares are continuing at a rate of one every 3 to 6 hours, and NOAA forecasters estimate a 20% chance of even stronger M flares. If you have a transoceanic flight scheduled for the next couple of days, you might want to wear your lead foil hat. The Bond vigilantes are finally flexing their muscles. A long period of stability for the U.S. government bond market showed signs of cracking this week as a lack of investor appetite for new debt sent the benchmark 10-year yield to its highest level since last June. The term bond vigilantes was coined in the 1980s when bond investors pushed up the long-term yields to force central banks into taking action to curb inflation. This time, bond investors are less worried about inflation. They are fretting about huge fiscal deficits and the looming bond supply needed to finance them. What does this mean? It means that the money supply is about to dry up. Bondholders will sell, not buy. Everyone thought we would see rising rates due to higher inflation, but it appears the bond vigilantes are demanding a higher real rate due to concerns about treasury issuance, says George Concalves, head of fixed income strategy at Nomura Securities. The spotlight on Greece only helped to reveal that the U.S.'s kitchen, with federal and state budget balances, was itself full of cockroaches, says William O'Donnell, strategist at RBS Securities. We told you this was coming. I hope you have your cash out of the bank the way we advised. My new book, Remembering the Future, will be out in print in about 90 days, but we didn't want you to wait, so we put the ebook out. You can get to it at rememberingthefuturebook.com. Rememberingthefuturebook.com. Get the ebook in your hands. Get it read. When the printed version comes out, you will receive a 25% discount and the audiobook when the printed version comes out. Also, Twitter is now alive and well on X Squared Radio. I add stuff all day as we approach the announcement on the Inner Earth Expedition, the launch of the nation's first affordable electric vehicles, and other great things. So follow me, Brooks Agnew, on Twitter by searching for Brooks Agnew. Easy enough. Hey, on March 19th, just a few days ago, at 11:19 Central Time, A meteoroid entered Earth's atmosphere over the southeastern United States and disintegrated in a flash as bright as the crescent moon. To the human eye, it appeared to be a garden variety fireball, the kind that appears almost every clear night. But NASA cameras had a different story to tell. This was an unusually low-flying meteor, says Bill Cook of NASA's Meteoroid Environment Office. Cook and colleagues operate a pair of all-sky cameras, one in Huntsville, Alabama, and another in Chickamauga, Georgia. Both cameras caught the fireball, allowing rapid triangulation of its flight path. It was first recorded at an altitude of 72.9 kilometers, that's about 45 miles, and burned up at an altitude of 32.5 kilometers, that's about 20 miles. That's low. Most meteoroids disintegrate about 70 to 80 kilometers high. This one held together for a much deeper descent. Quote, "It had a lot of structural integrity. Maybe it was a metallic object," speculates Cook. Based on the brightness and velocity of the fireball, he estimates a mass of about 10 kilograms and a diameter of about 20 centimeters. That's a very decent size. Cook's Meteor Mini network is smart. When both cameras catch a fireball, the system's software springs into action and immediately calculates a flight path and orbit for the meteoroid. Cook receives an email alerting him to interesting events that might otherwise have gone unnoticed. In the near future, we plan to expand our network along the eastern seaboard of the United States, notes Cook. With smart cameras on duty, who knows what we might find. Well, tonight, we are scheduled to have Suzanne Taylor. She is a filmmaker, has made a movie called What on Earth? What on Earth is a very, very well-produced movie on crop circles. We're going to leave the lines open all night, so if you want to be part of the program, you can call in at 415-762-1161. 415-762-1161. Don't go away. 40 seconds. X Squared Radio is about to take off. All around the planet, in every age, in just about every media since humans have kept records, there have appeared amazing patterns left in the night. Could the Tibetan mandalas be the leftovers of a prehistoric language? Could the stunning patterns left in wheat and cornfields all over the world be messages left for us, come from off-world sources? If crop circles are all fake, how have they appeared on every continent over a 2,000-year period with near identical precision? When compiled, do they form a language with a message for the people of Earth? Well, when we get a hold of our guest tonight, Suzanne Taylor, should be about 10 minutes or so, we will follow up on that question. Many of you have emailed me of late wanting some update on the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition. You will be happy to know that Discovery Channel producers have recorded a short pilot intro. We call it a pitch in the business. And we are now discussing it. We are now discussing the expedition. Here we are in 2010, 2 years away from the final year in which the Captain Kolibnikov, the only ship, civilian ship, left on the planet that can make this voyage a reality. I know you all have been waiting. I have been waiting as well. But these kinds of things occur when they're supposed to occur. So when it comes to the expedition, I invoke the Gandalf disclaimer. Oh, the Gandalf disclaimer. You know the one I'm talking about. The one Frodo confronted Gandalf with in the first movie. You're late. With a stern look, Gandalf looked at Frodo and said a wizard is never late. He arrives at exactly when he's supposed to arrive. Same thing with the expedition, people. It's going to happen. We've already been there, we've already seen it, we've already realized it, and you are the beneficiary of that expedition. So trust me, we're working on it, but your consciousness, your help, your energy, and believe me, we have received thousands of emails of people who want to be part of this expedition. You are part of the expedition. You are going with us in spirit. In case you log into the website and watch the real-time footage from the cameras on deck during the 15-day record-setting, remarkable, greatest expedition in the history of the world, or whether you're actually on the ship. Now, I have had people come to me and say, oh, I really want to go on this expedition. I turn and say, really? Do you know what you're asking? Do you know what you're manifesting? Are you ready for 120-foot high seas? Are you ready for 70-mile-an-hour sub-zero winds? Are you ready for ice breaking 8 or 9 days in a row, 24 hours a day? Are you really ready for that? I think most people experience expeditions on television or in the movies, and I think that is how we're going to bring this film to you. If you want to be part of tonight's program, Suzanne's running just a little bit late. No worries. She's going to be with us. The number is 415-762-1161. In case you have a latent question left over for March of 2010, you can easily reach us right now and pose your question, 415-762-1161. I'll tell you. The activity is incredible out there. Over the last 2 weeks, we have given probably 15 different interviews all around the country, in fact, all around the world, in the UK and the United States. Lots and lots of people are ready for this expedition. They're really fired up about that. They're fired up about HAARP. They're fired up about the incredible intensity of earthquakes and the frequency of them. Not only in Haiti, but also in Chile. And it looks like it's shaping up to be a very eventful year as we build up this crescendo toward 2012. How many 2012 specials are there going to be out there? How has 2012 affected your life? How are you preparing for 2012? Interesting questions, people. Interesting questions, and you can bring them anytime you like, to this program, 415-762-1161. Oh, also, one more update. The syndication of X Squared Radio. Everything's moving along pretty well with that. They want to brand me, which, as you know, if you're a listener to this program, I'm not terrifically comfortable with, because this program was designed to be around the information. It was designed to be the kind of program that brings you the message without me getting in the way. I'm just a facilitator. I'm just the voice behind this soft microphone. But you have indicated that you want the program to go further. You want it to go wider. You want it to reach more people. And so we've begun to take the effort to syndicate X Squared Radio. Now, we're already on the internet. You know that. BBS Radio is the most listened to internet network in the world. It is up there with the top 100 websites next to Google and Yahoo. So BBS Radio is a modern day icon. And as long as our producers will dedicate their love and their passion to this subject matter, you're going to have us here. That being said, we are about to launch into the broadcast world. That means people driving around in their cars are going to be able to hear us. We have an early caller tonight, Robin, on line one. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, I kind of like to kick off some of this 2012 questioning. You're running on the History Channel tonight. All this stuff about 2012 and the Mayan calendar, and they keep saying at the end of it, it's like that the Mayan calendar was the end of the calendar and at the end of the world. They're kind of inferring that, and they're talking about Nostradamus and this and a few other, you know, things too. Do you think that the Mayan calendar, I know you did some work on it in your book, Ark of Millions of Years, is that what you found the Mayan calendar to be saying, that this was the end of the world? And like they were also talking about the Hindus and the Kali Yugas and saying that this was the end also. I mean, is this like a crescendo to something that's going to end or what?
Well, I think it's an easy message to get behind. It is easy to beat the drum of doom and gloom. It's easy to look at cataclysms and catastrophes and illnesses and signs in the heavens and in the earth and say, oh my goodness, the times prophesied in Revelations are here upon us. Of course the Mayans go along with the Bible and blah, blah, blah. It's an easy parade to follow. However, that's not what we actually found in the record. If you really want to not taint it or not put on your Nostradamus goggles, you'll see that it is a time of shift. It is a dimensional change. And the best that the Mayans could describe it, it is a transition from one world to another world. It isn't necessarily the end of the world, it is the end of the old world and the ushering in of a new world, of higher energy, of greater awareness, of, I guess for lack of a better word, we can call it ascension, which doesn't mean everybody has to die and then be resurrected. It means rather that there is an awareness not unlike when Source originally said, I am. Sure, it was the end of the old Source, but it was the beginning of a new, more aware, more active, more progressive, and a fully functional Source. So when we say we're moving from the third dimension to the fourth dimension or the fifth dimension, if the Mayans had a way of saying that, I think maybe it's not so dismal. Cataclysmic? Maybe. But, you know, the end of what? Misery? Are we ready for that?
Well, you're a theoretical physicist. So what is the theoretical physicist's take on this? Because I know they're doing some studies and looking at it, too. And they're talking about, as we're moving through this procession, that, you know, we are starting... It is starting to affect the Earth a little bit, but I mean, what do they say? I mean,
well, if you know, physics is like English literature. There are many levels to it. If you want to talk about astrophysics, supported by groups like NASA and the European Space Agency, I would say 25% of the missions that have been launched in the last decade have been dedicated to gathering data, believe it or not, to support or refute the idea that in 2012 we're coming up to some kind of cataclysm. Now, notwithstanding even Kepler, although Kepler is an exploratory mission that was 20 years in the making, it is now out there in space looking for none other than M-class planets. Now, it's interesting to note that they have found one planet that's very, very similar to Earth, but it's 21 light years away. If Kepler is successful, we might find an escape route. We might find a way for humans to make one more leap into space as a race. Now, the other missions, like, for instance, the Themis probes that were launched in February of 2008... they were launched specifically to find the source of the auroras that occur on the Earth. Why would be Why would we be so curious about that? Don't we already know that they're caused by the solar wind? Well, guess what? We don't. The data, the more we study it, the more confused we are. We don't find a correlation between solar wind, that is to say our sun, and the auroras that occur over the North and South Poles. They don't line up. They're rather seasonal compared to what the sun does. And we're even subject to radiation from elsewhere in space, a galactic wind, which we are now being significantly buffeted by. So, to say that physicists support the idea that something's going to happen in 2012, you're probably right. They do, because if they didn't, they wouldn't be spending a significant amount of the budget to gather data, and I'm not even sure they would share it with us if they did find it, to support or refute the idea that in 2012 we're going to be lining up with something rather nasty.
Okay, well, if you've got, you were talking about an ascension, sort of like a potential ascension experience for conscious beings on this earth. What would that kind of look like, and how would somebody prepare for that in order to deal with it? Is this a? Do we have control over this with our consciousness? Is it like Jesus says, you know, if you have the faith of a mustard seed, or I mean, how does that unfold for someone? How do they pursue, you know, preparing for that, looking at it, you know, just taking on a different approach, you know, than the normal, you know, just go to church on Sunday. I mean, if they want to kind of break out and explore and see what they can do and what they can experience their own consciousness in that and what it has to say, how would they do that? How can...
Well, let me start with the first question. You asked, you know, are we in control of that? I would say, based on my studies and what I've learned, that is about the only thing we really are in control of. In fact, no one else is in control of that. If one has the propensity to ascend, one is ready to ascend, one is ready to have an ascension experience, mind you, it doesn't happen all in one step. You don't walk down the street as a dark heart eating cookies and drinking milk and then boom, all of a sudden you ascend. It doesn't work like that. You have what is commonly called in the scriptures a mighty change of heart. Now, when you're faced with that moment, and it comes at different ages for different people and for different reasons, some during near-death experiences and others, you know, during a conference or during a peculiar church service. When that ascension experience is presented to you, you can either accept it or reject it. You can say, wow, I really feel differently today than I did yesterday, and I think I'm going to take a different path in my life. I'm not going to treat people the way I used to treat them. I'm not going to participate in activities that lower my frequency the way I have done in the past in my life. So in making these choices, of course you're in control. Of course you can make ascension welcome in your life or not welcome in your life. As to when it occurs, I think that's different for every single person. I just want to let you know that Suzanne is now with us, and I would very much like to continue with our regular programming. Is that okay, Robin?
Thank you. No, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your call. Earth Explorers, we are ready to do this. So we'll be back in 40 seconds with Suzanne Taylor. Don't go away. Well, I'm sure you've seen them. magazines and television specials and maybe even a film or two all over the planet in almost every age. Strange patterns left in crops and sand and ice, telling a story, awakening something deep inside of us. Let's find out about it. Our guest tonight, Suzanne Taylor, is the producer and filmmaker of a movie called What on Earth. If you haven't seen it, you can order it, watch it by going to whatonearththemovie.com. whatonearththemovie.com. Our guest, Suzanne Taylor, is with us now. Welcome to the program.
Well, listen, I'm really sorry that the aliens took me for the first half hour. I pleaded with them. I told them I had a radio show to do. So thank God.
Oh, that's great.
I mean, you know, they know that I'm, you know, on their side, and you know, they would never really hurt me too much. You
know? Well, I know. Most of the aliens are out there in California, too. Out here, we're all earthlings.
Oh, definitely. We have, yes. Every time you turn around, there's an alien. There's another one.
I got to ask you, Suzanne, what you made this remarkable film. I've watched it twice, and I wish it had pages so I could leave post-it notes all through it. What compelled you to make this documentary, and how did it come together for you?
Well, my interest really is in saving the world, if you really want to know the truth. What can I tell you? You know, some of us get these missions. Not that we think we're, you know, egotistical maniacs. We think we're going to accomplish it, but we get these kind of directives, you know, that's what we're supposed to do. So my supposed to do was change consciousness, wake up this world. We're making war? No, how can we do this? This is idiotic. Boxing? We pummel each other and senseless? No, we have to open our minds and think higher thoughts. So I've been at that for a long time, longer than I've been at the crop circles, and I've been at the crop circles since the late 80s. But my interest in this crazy world went back even before that. And I was producing all different kinds of events and programs that had to do with, you know, essentially changing consciousness or changing our worldview, changing our collective consciousness of how we see ourselves as humanity and what we think we're doing here. And the crop circles just came along as one topic. I saw pictures of them in the late 80s. A friend of mine had a son who was stationed in the military in England. And on his leave, he would go out and take these pictures and send them back to his dad. At the time, they were calling them, over in England, they were calling them landing pads for UFOs. So I looked at these landing pads. I don't really know all that much about UFOs. I mean, that wasn't one of my topics. But now, of course, I've gotten much wiser about all of that category as well. But I looked at them and I thought, whoa, what's that? I mean, they are fascinating, you know. Your first engagement with them, or your first opportunity to, you know, see what in wheat fields we're making this gorgeous art. What could that be? So I got interested and quickly got the idea that wow, if these were being delivered to us by another intelligence, it would change our world. And so I just got more and more tuned in and sort of stopped doing other things, and my focus became, you know, more and more intense on this phenomenon. And I thought, you know, of all the things in the world that I can do that are valuable and that are healthful and whatever, all the kind of stuff I've been doing, this is the thing that I can uniquely do, because there's not that many people who are really having this obsession that I have. And this topic is the one that I really can deliver on. I really can. If I can deliver, I can really make a difference. So,
well, that's the thing that fascinates me.
Your question, I think I'm at the end of it.
The thing that fascinates me about the crop circles, the first time I really saw an aerial photograph of them, it was something I couldn't just page away from really quickly. It was like, wow. You know, this was a picture of, I don't know, maybe 1,000 feet in the air looking down. And I said, man, that's really complex. How long did that take to make? And you read further and it says, well, it happens overnight. What do you mean overnight? And how many hundreds of people does it take to make this thing? Well, yep. It isn't made by people. It's made by strange lights in the middle of the night. Okay,
what?
Now I'm really interested, Suzanne. Where do we go from here? What do we understand about this stuff?
Are you asking where do we go from here?
Yeah, you know, the thing is, these patterns are so, they're like iconic. They're like, gee, that looks familiar. What the heck does that mean?
Well, indeed. I mean, they're not just simplistic little nothings, you know. They are dimensional and loaded with information and intelligence and intrigue. You know, one of the reasons that I, obviously the UFO phenomenon is related in that we're talking about visitation from elsewhere. But in the UFO field, it's either, is it or isn't it? Are they real or aren't they real? And not too much beyond that in terms of, well, if they are real, what's the content? What more can we say now? I mean, obviously, if we made, you know, real contact, there'd be lots to do, lots to say. But in terms of what we can engage about prior to that, or if that doesn't happen, there's just so much to this phenomenon. It's just full of information and angles, and, you know, you can make a whole film about it, and it isn't a film about are they or aren't they, although that's certainly one of the aspects you have to deal with, but it's a film about what all the body of information is and body of, you know, perspectives and knowledge and experience and, you know, all the patterns and how are they made and what are the designs and then the speculations, what are they trying to tell us, you know, it just, I mean, we can make a movie about it, as I have.
Well, you know, let's answer the most fundamental question first, because someone who's never been exposed to them before, or someone who sits down and thinks about it for a while, realizes pretty quickly that they got to answer this question, just like you did. Are they real, or are they not real? What does it mean, are they real?
Time-directed question, yes.
What does it mean, are they real?
Well, real, it's not right the right word, is it? I mean, what they mean, that's the shorthand for, is it a real phenomenon, or is it some kind of perpetration by people who are trying to fool you into thinking there's a real phenomenon?
Well, so, let's talk about the perpetration just for a moment. Let's see if we can get that out of the way. If they were to be faked, and I understand that there have been a couple of individuals that have come forward and said, yes, 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 we made this one and we made that one. What, I guess I have several questions about this. What stops them from making a mistake in the middle of the night? Oh, gee, my string broke, or I got hung up on this stick over here, and we've already made this pattern halfway in the wheat. We better get out of here. Are there any bad crop circles out there?
Well, you do see some where the pattern isn't complete, or it's that one part doesn't match another part. That's actually the indication that you're dealing with a hoax one. I want to say about five things at once here. Now I have to do it one at a time.
I'm doing the same thing. Go ahead.
Right. So the astonishing thing is that these incredibly complex patterns are frequently many. I don't know whether to say more than not. You know, there's hoax. That's what's kind of distracting me here, because there really is, unfortunately, lots of hoaxing. I think more so than there was in the early years. And we don't want to, you know, be deceptive about that. But that's not the point. I mean, the point is that there's a real phenomenon. And then the hoaxers are kind of like the terrorists of the crop circle world. And as I say, one of the ways you will see formations that are quite lovely in their concept, you might say, or in some aspect of their execution, but the geometry's off, or, you know, or they're incomplete. You'll see, oh, that there's an arm over there, and there's not a corresponding arm. Not that they're all geometric like that, but many of them are, where it's supposed to. You can quite clearly see that the design intended to be symmetrical, and then something's left out. Signal that, you know, was not made by us. But I also wanted to go back. You mentioned being made overnight. In fact, there have been a fair number of eyewitness accounts. I'm not quite sure of how many, because nobody's collecting in a central spot. But if I had a guess, I would say there have been maybe 40 eyewitness accounts going way back, going into the 40s, actually, when I think the first ones came in. And there was a Center for Crop Circle Studies that disbanded some years ago, but they used to collect these things, and they put out a little information booklet at one point, and I think there were 25 in the booklet. Now, they've been gone for some years, and there have been more since then. So I'm estimating we've got maybe 40 or so eyewitness accounts. And they all say the same thing. They all say that they go down in seconds. I mean, these are people who just happen to be there when, you know, close enough proximity that they could actually see this thing forming.
Wow.
And they say to go down in 6 or 7 seconds. You saw my little simulation in my film of one of the swirling, you know, the crop going down. And that is what they see. All of a sudden, it swirls down, and 6 or 7 seconds, you've got the whole formation. Just another of the awesome aspects of all of it.
Now, that really is fascinating. And one of the other things about the difference between one that looks like it's been stomped down with a piece of 4x8 plywood and one that lays down the way you just described is the actual condition of the crops. Now, can we describe that a little bit?
Well, as you saw in the film, I took a picture of one that was an ad for Hello Kitty, and those are not hoaxed. When they do ads, they're done in daylight, and the farmer has been paid, and nobody's trying to fool anybody. They're just doing their thing, you know. The hoaxers know how to do that. And it's just a mess on the ground. Now, you can't tell that from the air, and that's their ad. Their ad is always photographed from the air. They're never inside the crop circle doing the ad. They only want to show you the pattern. And you can't tell from the air what the ground lay looks like. As long as it's down, it serves the purpose of indicating the pattern. But when you get in them, which is such a graphic example in the film, you see that this mess of you know, muddle on the ground in Hello Kitty is contrasted to one of the mysterious crop circles of which we don't know the origin. And it's like a carpet. Everything's laying down beautifully. It's all as if, you know, many different fingers kind of carefully laid the stalks down parallel to one another. So, indeed. But, you know, I think the hoaxers have gotten better at that also because we have some indication. You know, sometimes you know something's hoaxed because the central people who are in charge will be looking for a team. And during the day, a drawing will be seen and there's invitation to join the team to go out and make it, and the next day there it is, and see, oh yeah, I know that one's hoaxed because they were recruiting a team to make it the day before. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And you know, they've actually gotten better at the lays also. The lays are looking pretty good. You know, the Mayan ones, I'm trying to remember what year, I think it was 2006 when the first of those arrived, and it was good enough to make the cover of several crop circle books and publications and what have you. And that's the one that actually startled people when they discovered that was one of the ones that they'd been recruiting for the night before. And it actually took them 2 nights to make it. It wasn't complete the first night. And it was discovered, and, oh, crop circle. And then the next night it had all this detail in it that it hadn't had the day before. And that one was like, whoa, they've gotten some better technology now. They're better at it. They're making it harder to discern what's going on.
Well, I know that
also
there have been some really, really great ones. Like a couple of years ago, one showed up and had like 366 circles in it. And it was a big swirling pattern. It was probably 450 feet in diameter. It ostensibly occurred in one night, and the symmetry was just stunning. And one of the strange things that I noticed about that particular one, when it was analyzed, when people went down there with magnetometers and different kinds of instruments to sense the energy actually inside the pattern itself, there was a difference between the energy inside the pattern and the background energy just out there where the crop was growing, you know, in cultivated style.
You take the gizmos in, and yes, indeed.
Well, what is the difference? And I guess as an instrumental analyst myself, I think about it, you know, is the energy pattern the result of the energy that laid the wheat down? Or is it because the wheat has been redirected and all laying in this pattern that the life force of the wheat itself is causing this energy?
Well, who knows? You're asking a question that I've never heard any speculation on why. All we pay attention to is that the hoax circles don't give you any, the gizmos don't give you anything.
Ah, that's what I wanted to know.
Get all this response from, you know, your instruments that are trying to pick up radioactivity or electromagnetism, whatever. It's not exactly my field, so
yeah.
I'm not using the right words.
Well, that's exactly what I wanted to know. Is there a difference between a hoaxed pattern and one that that has the authentic feel to it when you walk inside of it with instruments? Can you tell the difference between one that's laid down?
Yes, definitely. I'm telling you, the instruments won't give you anything when you're in a hoax formation, and they go, you know, they buzz a lot. I don't know, you know, the instruments are not designed, I don't think, to give you particular content of analysis of some sort, but what they do pick up is the fact that, whoa, they are reacting to some disturbance or something that untoward, something that doesn't happen when people stomp crop down. So something has left energy or, well, you know, here we go. We get batteries that drain, brand new batteries. People, you see the girl in my film that's sitting in the middle of the circle quite puzzled because there she is with her camera had brand new batteries when she came in, and she's sitting there with this drained battery, you know. And cell phones, they won't work in the circle, and you just, even as we, again, show in the film, this person went around the whole perimeter of a formation, and he put the cell phone out with just his arm, you know, over the standing crop that wasn't a part of the formation. Cell phone signal was fine. He brought it back in. Cell phone signal wasn't there. You know, something's going on, some disturbance or, you know, what shall we call it? Something has happened when the genuine thing is in play.
What about the wheat itself? I mean, does the farmer just combine this all up in one big bunch, or is the wheat inside the pattern ever collected and harvested and bread made out of it? I mean, does the grain itself have a different quality or a different density than grain outside the circle?
Well, they made beer out of it. Now, is the fact that I'm not a beer drinker salient? No. I know they made beer, but I never saw it. Who knows? I mean, maybe people got high in a whole new way. And they've made flower essence stuff, like the Bach flower remedies. They've made that, too. Although there isn't much reporting back about any effect. Oh, I've actually made cookies. I use regular flour, but I pounded down some of the... So I think all my friends are very buzzy. And yeah, I like to think that it's because they ate my cookies. But nobody's ever really made a commercial product out of it. And in terms of what can be done, I don't know that you're asking me this, but if people don't walk in the formations, the harvester can actually pick it up. It doesn't lay flat enough. It's springy, you know. It doesn't lay flat enough to the ground to lose the crop. But the minute people walk in it, of course, forget it. You know, they can't pick up the crop anymore. But in the good circles, then we feel sorry for the farmer. He's lost his crop, and particularly the big ones. I think the one you were talking about is the size of actually of two football fields.
Oh, yeah.
The biggest one ever. It came in 4,000, yeah, right. It came in 2001, and it was awesome. I spent a lot of time in that one. Perfect. You know, there were actually 409 separate circles
in a
pattern
goodness.
Made up of circles, a very geometric pattern that's actually called a Catherine wheel, which seems to be from the Bible somehow. And, you know, you walk around in the middle of the night the size of two football fields, and even if you had a huge team, which, I mean, God knows if you tried, you would have had to have had a huge team. I mean, nobody kind of, it was very dry wheat. The minute you touch dry wheat, it gives, you know. So these were perfect circles. So what? Nobody misstepped. Nobody bent over. Nobody whatever. You know, that was one of the ones. In fact, there's a major hoaxing team that gets most of the attention, although there are others as well now. And they were puzzled. They actually put out a statement that said, well, there's one we can't figure out.
Oh, my goodness. Now, what about the hoaxers? Let's talk about them just a little bit. These are people that... are evidently are very skilled. They go out, they lay the wheat down, they make beautiful patterns. What do they feel when they're making a crop circle? Do they feel?
You're gonna have to ask a hoaxer about that. They don't talk to us much.
Oh, they don't.
No. Well, they taunt us. Actually, you can't really have a civil conversation with. I mean, they're different. There are different people. You know, this is not one persona. Some of them, I must tell you, are among the most despicable people you would ever want to meet. They send out emails. One of them attended a crop circle event, a public event, and went around with his cell phone snapping pictures of the major people in the research community when they were, you know, yawning or making, you know, everybody, if you catch the right picture, doesn't look so good.
Uh-huh.
But we caught just the pictures where everybody looked ghoulish. And then he sent out a big email with all those pictures on it. I mean, these are nasty folk. Now, they're not all like that, though. This team I'm telling you about is rather sophisticated, and they have some decent art portfolios. They're not, you know, their artwork is okay, but they take some relish in deception and in
They're like metaphysical anarchists.
Well, I guess you could say that. They gloat over having pulled, you know, having fooled you, and even not, less nice than that. I once tried actually to go out on one of the hoaxer expeditions, and a hoaxer was befriending me, and you know, it's like the, you know, the television shows go over there to make films, the cable stations, and they'll interview the researchers, and the researchers feel, God, they just said the most interesting things, and the interviewer was really interested in what they had to say, and it was all so exciting, and then you see the product that gets turned out, and they've cherry-picked to deride the phenomenon, you know, to make it look bad, to make it look silly, to make the people speaking look silly, to the point where there are certain stations where the real researchers won't even, they won't go on their programs anymore because they know they're being fooled and seduced and whatever. Well, the hoaxers are kind of like that. You know, they're playing in that kind of deceptive territory in all ways. You know, the particular situation I was in, they were befriending me, and then all of a sudden these emails started to go around about what kind of character I was and how ridiculous I was. And, oh, God, you know, what? Why are you doing this? And why are they doing it? I don't know. Nobody can figure it out.
Hmm.
I mean, they can't get any credit. If they make something good, they'd get arrested if it were known that they had made them. Why do they do it? And then you start to wonder about what's supporting them, what's funding them. That would be, if I made another movie, that's the movie I'd make.
Yeah, you'd have to follow the money and find out what's going on. Why? How are they organized? How do they communicate?
Yeah.
What equipment do they have? What transportation do they have? Because, you know, artists are...
I tried to hire investigative reporters. I've gone after a couple of them. Greg Pallas was my favorite one. I don't know if you know who he is on the national scene. But he's just wonderful. He's got a good sense of humor, and he does... he revealed things about the Bush election and the machines and things about what oil is all about that I really understood in a way I never had before, what the global game is that's going on. And I paid a lot of money to go to a fundraiser where I sidled my way up to sit next to him at dinner thinking, okay, I'm going to get this guy, get him interested. And I was at a round table. He's sitting on my right, and there are it was a table for eight, and all the people at the table were so fascinated by the fact that I knew about crop circles that they wouldn't stop talking to me, and all I wanted to do was talk to the guy next to me, Greg. So I didn't get too much chance to engage him. But, you know, the people who were doing this political reporting were so good at investigative journalism. You know, they're somehow, you'd think maybe if they were open-minded enough to be on a political admirable front politically, that, you know, they'd be open-minded about otherworldliness as well, but not so. This is a little far out for anybody doing kind of mainstream work. And so I've not been successful at luring a journalist away. Now, I haven't had big bucks to dangle in front of them.
Yeah.
So who knows, maybe if I get myself a really juicy funder, I can hire somebody. But I've got my preliminary work done. I keep sending Greg Palast information about Crop Circle. I think someday, you know, maybe I'll catch that guy. If anybody knows Greg Palast and listening to this show, put in a good word.
You never know. This program goes out all over the world. By the way, if you want to be part of the program and ask Suzanne a question, she's obviously discovered a lot more than she put in her film. The phone number is 415-762-1161. 415-762-1161. We're coming up to the top of the first hour. You know, when it comes to following the money on these kinds of things, now we're talking about the hoaxers. One of the more interesting responses to the face-to-face on-film interviews that you do in this great movie, What on Earth, is the gentleman who says, they want nothing. They're not asking for anything. They're just...
This will blow your minds. They don't want anything from us. How odd in the world we live in. Brooks, can I also tell people to go to cropcirclemovie.com? I can, because I just did. And that's where to go to buy. We have a sale going on. When we launched this officially on the Internet, this film, we made a great bargain with free gifts and what have you. And cropcirclemovie.com is the place to go to... get that.
Okay, so we've got it on there now. CropCircleMovie.com. We'll put the link up when we upload the program tonight.
Site you can link to from there, which is quite beautiful. It's all bells and whistles and flash and fun and about the circles, about the film. But we want them to go to CropCircleMovie.com because that's the irresistible offer to buy.
Well, one of the things that I want to try to get out there is the fact that there's this isn't something that just happened of late. These patterns have been showing up a long, long time. In the very beginning of the program, in the monologue, I was talking about Tibetan mandalas and how you know, they meditate for many hours. And even if you go to the Patala in Tibet, which was built in the 7th century, they have a miniature mandala building. It has 108 rooms in it. It's a scale model building made of precious metals and gems, and monks actually concentrate on this mandala building, mentally going from room to room through it. Now, it's said that once you get through all 108 rooms, that you will reach enlightenment. But these patterns, the mix of geometric patterns, the shapes, triangles and spirals and swirling geometric and very symmetrical designs, go back thousands of years, and you can't tell me that there have been thousands of years of expert hoaxers out there.
Indeed, and even when people think perhaps it's some kind of advanced technology, satellite, blah, 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 whatever, which it isn't, by the way. We could go into that as well, where that wouldn't work. But, you know, people think, well, technology will do anything. But then you say, well, what about the fact that these things have been occurring for hundreds of years? And indeed they have. The one that's cited in all crop circle lore is from 1678, the woodcut, the famous mowing devil woodcut. If you know anything about crop circles, you know about the mowing devil. And it's quite clearly a crop circle. It's a woodcut. That's what they were doing in the day then.
Mm-hmm.
And it's written in kind of old English, little description of how the farmer didn't want to pay the harvester, and he said, let the devil do it. And then in the morning he woke up, and there was this thing. And you look at this picture, you go, oh, my God, that's a crop circle. There's no question about it. And that's 1678. And then, interestingly, about every 100 years you'll find a little outcropping of something that, again, you can point to and go, oh, they're talking about a crop circle, or that's a picture, or a little flurry of whatever the literature of the day was. And then it doesn't continue, it doesn't sustain, it goes away. And then 100 years later, give or take, it's back again. And we do a recreation of the story in Nature magazine, which is quite a prestigious British publication, kind of like our New England Journal of Medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And they had an exchange about crop circles, obviously, I mean, you just wouldn't doubt it at all, from 1890. And we show you the original post that was made, computer language now, the entry that was made by a scientist who had discovered this field with circles in them. And then there were a few other issues of that publication where letters were written back and forth. We don't mention that in there, but they were. And then they petered out, went away. And it's almost like the phenomenon needs to be paid attention to deliver. When it is paid attention to, and this is kind of all over the world, some country doesn't have them, and then all of a sudden somebody will visit England, go back home, and organize an event, and all of a sudden little crop circles start to appear. It's like when the energy is receptive, the crop circles deliver. And it wasn't until the 1970s, when this 100-year cycle came, you know, due, the late 70s, and again, the flurry took place, but this flurry didn't go away. It was picked up on, I guess, probably because of our modern communication system is so much better. At any rate, the people who were interested in it attracted more people, and they didn't stop being interested in it, and they would go out in the fields, and the original studies started to take place. And then now we have our full-blown phenomenon that has not gone away. It comes every year. All over the world, actually. We have about 40 other countries that, aside from England, where they get the best and the most. And, you know, we can sort of count on it. We talk about the crop circle season like it's the races.
But right.
We get it. You know, there's no question. Every year they come.
Well, I want to talk about that. And
in our interest in them.
I want to talk about how worldwide these things are, and we'll get more into that here in the next hour. I'm going to take a quick 5-minute break, get a drink, relax a little bit. We'll be right back. Don't go away. We're coming back with more X Squared Radio.